When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Eric Cohn.
I'm Ann Thompson.
And we are a week away from the Cannes Film Festival, which is always a fun time for you and I to get fired up about international cinema. But before we get into that, let's check in on the WGA strike. When we talked last week, it was just getting going. Now it's starting to kind of feel like business as usual or not business as usual. How are you seeing sort of the reverberations of this in terms of what you're doing these days?
It's kind of fascinating how Netflix is becoming, you know, the boogeyman at the center of the whole thing.
Totally. Which
it is. I mean, this is not an inaccurate assessment that the disruptions that Netflix has wrought are, in fact, at the center of this whole thing. And whatever comes down in terms of a resolution is going to have Netflix at the center of it, too. But, you know, Ted Sarandos had to cancel his Penn Award appearance, and, you know, they had to turn their the upfronts in New York that are usually in person into some kind of virtual thing because there was going to be such a big protest there. So they're getting a lot of protests at Netflix. And the other thing that I think is great is that in a way that I don't think I remember seeing before, the writers are very organized and they're actually figuring out how to target specific shows and shut them down. And so there's a lot of production that is being.
Yeah, you've been seeing a lot of, I mean, the thing is, people don't realize at first that their favorite shows have been affected. But when you go longer than you expected before the new season of Stranger Things landed, suddenly it's real. And so you're starting to see the early stirrings of the disruption that they're trying to tap into. Though it is interesting how anybody who tries like some kind of workaround or seems like they might have a workaround where they could still be on set as a showrunner gets called out, which is what we saw.
The showrunners are getting called out. Even the directors are getting called out. You know, what are you allowed to do? What are you allowed to change?
Yeah.
So it's very well organized. I'm impressed. And then the other, you know, I did a Q&A with Paul Schrader at the Arrow, and I always enjoy talking to him, as I know you do. And he, you know, he's fun to see on Facebook. He's had some profiles in New York and The New Yorker that are fun to read, which I recommend.
He plays the media, doesn't he?
He knows what he's doing. But when he plays a room, it's fun to see him play a room because he's practiced, you know, he's going for the laughs. And if you've read all the articles, you know, some of his stories already, but it's
Did you
fun.
Read the New Yorker article? I mean, I was impressed that he got a 10,000 word or whatever. I didn't feel like it was a lot of new information, but it was certainly a lot of consolidation in terms of the impact this person has had on American cinema and his resilience in his late 70s, still cranking out screenplays and so forth.
Well, we covered a lot of ground. I mean, it was an Arrow crowd, so they were asking questions about transcendental style, of course. It was a screening of First Reformed, followed by Card Counter. And he's got Master Gardener coming up, which is part of this Lonely Man trilogy. But what we talked about also was the writer's strike. So he has a theory that if the directors and the actors support the writers when they go into their negotiations, because some of the same issues happen to apply, especially to the directors in terms of the disruptions to their residuals, right? Then you could have a shorter strike because they would have to resolve it with them.
But then the inverse of that is that the directors might be getting fired up by the same questions that the writers are on strike about and even more inclined to strike, which they haven't done in what,
They've
40
never
years
done it.
For 3 hours?
For 3 hours, right. So it's very rare. It's unlikely that the directors are going to strike. What's likely is that what his favorite idea of a scenario would be that they would all come to terms to prevent a strike.
But the term, I mean, we talked about this before, but the terms that the writers are asking for are so far removed from what the studios seem likely to meet. So I just don't see the happy medium yet. It feels like this could last a while until we get to a place where somebody flinches.
Well, the directors could be could be, because they're talking now. The directors and the AMPTP are talking now, and the actors are going to come up soon. They're both going to expire on June 30th. If they figure out how to fix all of these issues, the writers will follow along.
Well, one of the things we're seeing also is that there's like this greater awareness that writing permeates so many different aspects of the process. I mean, this idea that, you know, showrunners were told by big studios that they had to go back to work, right? HBO and Disney said, go back to work if you're a showrunner, which isn't a real credit, by the way. You're usually the head writer or the EP. And a lot of people were saying, well, there's no non-writing part to being a showrunner. And for a second there, it seemed like Tony Gilroy was still producing in a non-writing capacity on Andor, even though everybody knows Tony Gilroy is a writer.
But
eventually he had to say, no, I'm really not on this show, which is still shooting in London somehow without Tony Gilroy. They're really trying to get this done.
They're supposedly shooting House of the Dragon season 2 in London also.
Right. It's a messy process.
I haven't heard otherwise, you know, Ryan Condal being the showrunner writer in that case.
Right. And I do feel like a lot of people at every level of this business are really conflicted here. I mean, I've had filmmakers tell me, you know, they finally got this one name actor to do their movie this summer, and they believe in the WGA and the cause of the WGA, but they also really want to get this movie made. So it's a tough situation for a lot of people. And of course, for the gig economy side of it, the people who are at the low end of the totem pole, they're fighting for their future. But it's pretty complicated and kind of rough out there, you know. So when you see that there is this possibility that it could go on a while, it's a little scary in terms of, you know, how people write this ship.
So we're going to keep tracking it. It's going to go on, as you said, for quite a while. And meanwhile, Cannes is coming up next week.
And we'll see if this comes up there.
Eric, you and David Ehrlich are going to be there in the apartment that I was going to be in, but it turns out I couldn't go and someone else is going to rent my room. I'm so upset, but I'm really sorry to miss it this year. But
I'm sorry to miss you too. The many late nights of rosé, including some that we recorded this podcast alongside, will be always a part of our experience one way or the other.
So I've been trying to get early screenings and I haven't been doing very well. I saw one this morning, something from Assata Regard, which was the subtitles were masked incorrectly and you could only see if it was a deep caption, you could read the top line.
That's so funny.
If it was a single caption, you couldn't read it at all. And it was in Spanish. So I wasn't doing very well.
Oh man, I would have loved that. It would have really stretched my my Spanish skills. But I will say that I had a bad projection experience today in New York for a film I won't name, but it was a pretty significant screening. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, yes, it's a room full of journalists and this is not good, but if this happened in the Palais, you'd have a rebellion. You know, like now is the time to screw up.
So I hear there's a rebellion around Indiana Jones. Disney is demanding that people see it in the Palais. I can see why they want to show it in the Palais. That's the best place to show it.
Well, sure. And I do enjoy that experience. You put on your evening attire and you go to this experience. But I think what happens with the media, especially at Cannes, is that everyone who's done it, has been in the trenches, know how exhausting it is. Because you don't just go to the experience. You go to the experience, you see the movie with the crowd, and then you got to go get some work done. You got to go bang out a review or whatever it is that you're on assignment for. And so the idea of, you know, having to bang out the Indiana Jones review is less appealing to people when they know that some stuff can pre-screen. So why not create the environment where you can bang this one out in advance? But I do think it's a fascinating gamble by Disney because, you know, Harrison Ford is being honored. They're essentially saying, like, maybe the movie is good. James Mangold is a good director. It's got to be competent at least, but maybe the rock star air of a new Indiana Jones film at Cannes, which even met the last one, Crystal Skulls, which was not that great, will help elevate everything, including
they're
the
going for the bells and whistles and hoping it has some influence on how the media responds with a big audience, with a real audience, as opposed to the press audience.
Yeah. But I do wonder about these things a lot of the time, because it is a real question of, you know, how much faith does the studio have in the movie versus the canned version of this movie?
They just maximize their options. They all have jobs to do. And this is their, somebody said, this is the best way to show the movie. And they
we saw Top Gun Maverick early last year. We were blabbing about Top Gun Maverick this time last year ahead of Cannes, and it still went really well. So I'm just going to put that out there. It doesn't have to. You can trust your journalists if you actually have something good. I mean, Pixar is not pre-screening Elemental, which is a closing night film. Pixar movies have usually done well at Cannes, but they've always been directed by Pete Docter, and this one's not. So
I know.
Holding out hope. Exception.
And, yes, you know, we'll see. I mean, I want to see Asteroid City. They're not screening that early. I mean, these are films that have distributors who could easily book a screening room. I do hear that maybe Killers of the Flower Moon will screen. Well, we shall see.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of long movies this year, and that's one of them at 3 hours and 26 minutes. So it's probably a good idea.
So there's a couple of films that are likely to sell. And one of the things, there's a story running the same day that this podcast comes out. That we did on the market, on the sales market. And it's an interesting situation where the theatrical market couldn't be in worse shape for high-end, you know, smart films. It's not good, but which means that that's really an explanation for why something like May, December, the new Todd Haynes movie with Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, based on a true crime, why this would be in the competition, such a big high-profile movie with no distributor for North America. So there, that movie's for sale. And there's another one called Firebrand, this one with, you know, this Henry VIII movie with Jude Law, that's for sale. And I'm sure they're both going to be big sales.
They look promising. I've heard good things about both, but it is fascinating because, you know, Cannes isn't always a place where you get huge sales out of nowhere. I mean, Netflix
has get big
in,
sales in but... the market for the packages.
Yes, exactly.
And there are not quite a few big packages too. So you've got things like Conclave from Edward Berger, right, with Stanley Tucci and Ralph Fiennes and Isabella Rossellini and John Lithgow, or you have Voyagers, which is this biopic about Carl Sagan and Andruyan, you know.
I'm there. I
Sebastian
grew up
Lalo, you like him?
Oh yeah, big fan. Yeah, I mean, the market, well, that ties back into the strike, right? Because there's also this question of, you know, some of these packages are films that have not shot. A lot of them are films that have not, they might have a trailer or something. And there's a real question now of when they can actually go into production. So I'm curious to see how those deals go down.
Some of them are closer to being finished than others. You know, they're all at different stages of production. But there's a good, long, healthy list of really kind of robust packages that look promising. So, I mean, some of them are like Lords of War, you know, with Nick Cage, the Andrew Niccol movie, you know.
Sure.
And
there's always a Nicolas Cage movie at the Cannes market. Sometimes there have been like three of them. So it's business as usual. I mean, that's kind of heartening. It does feel like an old school Cannes in that sense. I mean,
I think it will be more lively than the last few. We've been the past few years when, you know, the different hotels didn't have as many banners on them as usual.
Yeah, I feel lucky to have
witnessed this. I think
the
pandemic is over, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you sound like Joe Biden, right? Like, nobody's wearing masks, it's fine. But I'm sure there will be COVID at Cannes, and there was COVID. I mean, we were there in 2021 before everyone was talking about Delta and not referring to an airline.
We had
it was
to take
definitely
tests
present.
Every day. It was horrible.
Oh, my God. I've blocked that out. My God. It was just like another kind of BS.
You just adapt. You do what you have to do, you know? Yeah, and then there was the year that they didn't have their digital ticketing figured out. So hopefully they're farther
along.
It's
opening this weekend.
Front.
We'll see how it goes. Everyone's asking me for the press screening schedule. They're trying to figure out. I mean, the industry people at Cannes, this is one thing I do appreciate about Cannes, that they really value critics. Above all, like critics get the best experience at Cannes relative to other stakeholders. Like industry people really have to fight for tickets. You get in trouble if you don't use your ticket. There's all this stuff, and everybody wants to get into these press screenings too. So now everyone's trying to figure that side of things out. I mean, I guess in some ways the online ticketing thing was an improvement over what Cannes used to be, which was a mosh pit. It's still very confusing, but it's an element that was added because of COVID. And last year, so we went to Cannes in 2021. That was in July, which was so weird. And then
we got to see what Cannes in the summer was like.
Exactly. Very hot.
A lot of families with their kids going to the beach.
Yeah, and then it was like semi-normal the following year, and this year
it just feels quieter.
Like...
It was still quite. There were a lot of players who weren't there. Everybody's going back now, but it'll be a test. It'll be a test of what, you know, the appetite the theatrical distributors have for buying new things. And I don't expect the streamers to be participating because they've been in production with a lot of projects. I spoke to someone from Amazon, and they have a ton of movies coming out.
Right.
And by the way, they're very commercial movies. There's less of the kind of Ted Hope kind of movies than
well, they've been moving away from that. I mean, Air comes out now finally on Amazon with very little marketing behind the Prime release because the theatrical was everything. And so I guess now we're going to see if that was an anomaly or not. Yeah, but they'll have a team there. I'm sure Netflix will have a team there. I mean, Netflix actually has the French distribution rights on the opening night film, John Duberry, which is an interesting point that I think
that's
a lot of people
that
are
noticing. I don't expect to come back to the States with Johnny Depp on board. Not expecting him to.
By hair, he's not in the movie that much, right?
In a U.S. sale.
It's more about Mai Wen, who, of course, has her own scandal since she like hit a journalist or something. But
and she admitted it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cannes always has its scandals. That's just sort of part of it.
I mean, I'm not approving of anyone hitting anyone, but it's refreshing when it's a woman hitting a man.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be curious to see how that plays out. There's a few different scandals brewing. I mean, Thierry Frémaux, the head of the festival, did that one interview where he said that he liked the Woody Allen film, but he couldn't show it because every headline would be, destroying them for it. And I thought that was notable because... in the past, they've sort of been like, well, we're Cannes. You can't touch us. We do what we want to do. So clearly something shifted culturally.
No, they've been otherwise commercially. Concerted effort to put more women in the competition. That pressure applied was successful. I mean, I wish there were more, but they're absolutely making an improved showing from before.
Yeah. Yeah, and
it has so much to do with perspective. It has to do with being able to see the films as being more important, not diminishing them just because they're directed by women, although they're putting them all at the end. What is that about?
Did notice
directed by women films.
I mean, it's hard to theorize about these things, right? Because there are some people who request later slots at the festival because they're still finishing their films or because they were added at a particular moment or other logistical issues, including talent.
You will talk to Terry, so you will ask him.
We will get into that one for sure. Anyway,
when are you speaking to him?
It's happening. It's a process. As you know, I mean, we had Thierry on this podcast pre-COVID.
He came over to the American Pavilion too.
But he said he was going to be there and then he didn't show up until the last 20 minutes while we were on stage. So you never know what might happen.
All right. We got to sell him. Yeah.
We'll improvise our way through that.
You're going to do a live screen talk with David Ehrlich.
Yes. Yes. Actually, I can announce that. That's actually a nice thing for people who will be at Cannes to know about, which is that the second Tuesday of Cannes, because Cannes starts on Tuesday, so a week into the festival at 2 p.m. at the American Pavilion. Maybe we'll have to FaceTime you, and if you can get up at that early hour in Los Angeles, we'll see.
But, I don't know that it's that important to me.
we have plenty of good stuff in store. We're still talking about more live editions and so forth. But
may be doing a live Tribeca edition.
That's right. That's right. So some stuff is cooking on that.
I'm planning to come to Tribeca for once, which is good. That's not true. I mean, I've been several times, but I don't always go.
Yeah, no, it's a good excuse to have you here in the summertime, of course. So we should also note that in spite of all this Cannes talk, there are movies opening this week. And we've seen a few of them. I think you've seen one that I haven't seen, which is still the Michael J. Fox.
So that's already on Apple TV.
Right, that opened like a week or two ago.
Yeah. And
we meant to talk about it earlier.
It's called Still, a Michael J. Fox movie. And it's Davis Guggenheim, who we know from An Inconvenient Truth. He won an Oscar for that. He's a very good documentary filmmaker. And he saw an opportunity here to take all the audio from the books that Michael J. Fox has written, the story of his Parkinson's disease, which was diagnosed when he was age 29, in which he hid for 7 years. He's 61 now. So he's had it for a long, long time. And now it's kind of bad. and he falls down all the time, and he has pins in his cheek and pins in his hand, and his hand is trembling, and it can never heal, and he's in terrible pain. This is a good movie, and he did a great job. He made it very entertaining, and he edited together all these bits from Michael J. Fox movies like Back to the Future and Teen Wolf and Bright Lights, Big City. And he's got the romance with Tracy Pollan is used from a scene that they have in Bright Lights, Big City. There's all these different ways that he uses the material and creative editing choices that he makes. And it's very entertaining at the same time that it's very moving. It's a good movie.
I'm glad you said that, and I will make time probably post-can to watch it, because I do enjoy a good celeb doc that consolidates all of this information and hits on the points why you're invested on that in that person. I hear so much complaining now about the state of the doc market being dominated.
This one isn't one of the hagiographic,
yeah, you there's know, so much
promo reels that are popular these days. And the other reason, to I just think it's good filmmaking. One of the other things he does is to adapt the Interitron that Errol Morris uses. And
now that Errol Morris has abandoned it.
Directly. Yeah, because it's sort of got its faults. Well, he got a tip from a cinematographer, and he figured out this one angle where he can look at the guy and talk to him 4 feet away and have it look like he's looking straight at the camera. So Michael J. Fox's Baby Blues coming straight at the camera is very effective.
Yeah, I can see that too, because he's sort of charming, right? I mean, that's part of it. It's not the Errol Morris thing where you're like creepily staring into the eyes of somebody who destroyed the Republic or was a serial killer or whatever.
He's Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
No, and also Errol is the one who's like 6 feet away yelling at him. He's right. What did you do?
That's true. He does. He yells a lot. What a goofball. He's so funny. But I love his movies, and I hope he keeps making them. There's also Blackberry opening. I don't know. Did you get a chance
to see
that
one? Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it back when it premiered in Berlin earlier this year. I really enjoyed it. It surprised me. Matt Johnson is this kind of quirky character, a very like low budget indie guy. His first movie, The Dirties, like 10 years ago, won Slam Dance. It was like this found footage movie about an aspiring filmmaker who turns out to be a high school shooter. So it's very dark, but it's also funny because you see it through the perspective of somebody that's willing to empathize with that perspective, which made it sort of a talky breakout story. So 10 years later, he sort of traveled through the system. He got an agent, he got some offers. He decided to stay in Toronto with his friends and make movies that are very lo-fi, and then got this offer to adapt a book about the BlackBerry story. And they made it on a very low budget, under $5 million in Toronto. The biggest star is Glenn Howerton, the guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who's very funny. But it has this kind of like lo-fi social network kind of vibe to it, because the story of the BlackBerry, which we all remember being this like great smartphone until it wasn't.
I was addicted in my day.
It's a really interesting story.
I had to really fight about giving it up when I had to get my first iPhone. It was a
By the way, so trauma. Did Barack Obama. I mean, everybody was into that keyboard. I tried to get a keyboard on my iPhone for a while.
We all fought it, but we went, right. we eventually succumbed.
So the movie is this kind of comedy of errors, basically, about like a geeky guy played by Jay Baruchel who figures out how to get email on a smartphone. And then Glenn Howerton is not a tech guy. He's a business guy, and he comes in and basically says, you know, I'll be your CEO and figure out how to do the corporate side of your business if you give me a huge share of the company. And so it ends up being this really complicated thing where this sort of scrappy Silicon Valley type of startup becomes more corporatized and more corrupt. And then the iPhone comes along. And of course, the iPhone creates all these complications. Really entertaining. I mean,
it's just a double bill with Tetris, you know? And
yeah, I know.
Air.
I was telling somebody about BlackBerry the other night, and they brought up Tetris. I do feel like I've talked about this before. Like, there is something about like the 90s as it recedes from view, the end of the 20th century, that it's becoming more and more canonized by popular storytelling. It's kind of charming in a way.
No, but the one I saw that's coming up is Sanctuary, which is another kind of low budget, two people in a room kind of movie that it's Chris Abbott and Margaret Qualley. And Margaret Qualley, I've had my eye on her for a long time.
Oh, for sure. Once upon
a time. She's showing how good she is. She's really
in this movie.
She's sexy. She's powerful. She's vulnerable. Yeah. And it feels like it's not about sex and it's not about romance. It's about power because she's a dominatrix. And, yeah. and the guy, this rich, wealthy hotel magnate is trying to break up with her. In
he's
a
sort
way.
Of a Don and Jr. type, like he inherited
he
money.
And he's actually sort of dorky but you realize that he's fired her and given her this $32,000 watch and that she's upset and yeah. she comes back
and takes a turn
to wreck her revenge. It's a fascinating.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Dynamic.
Yeah. And also there's all this role playing going on. So you don't always know, like, is this part of a sex thing or is she really, you know, messing with him or whatever? You know, Zach Wiegand, who made the movie, used to be a film critic. He actually freelanced for us a few times a while ago. And I like the way that this movie is like very thoughtful about what it's doing cinematically in a small space.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not just a film play. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens. There's a point where it's almost like the conversation where he's looking for a hidden something in the room.
That's where
it's
goes
really
crazy.
Well shot.
That's where it goes batshit crazy.
It was a good time. Yeah. I like that people are making stuff like this. I don't know if this was a COVID movie, so to speak, you know, where we suddenly had all these movies that were being made on a small scale, but whether it's Blackberry or Sanctuary, there is something that I think is worth singling out about the fact that, like, you don't need to spend 10 or 15 or 20 or $25 million to make a good movie now.
This could be on a double bill with Fair Play, which is also about the battle of the sexes, also about gender dynamics and power dynamics. Also,
and that one cost more just because the director had some connections and was able to shoot a more expensive movie, but it could have been made this cheaply. And Netflix bought that for $20 million out of Sundance and will be reintroducing it later this year. So I wonder, you know, if people will have a chance to see Sanctuary, if that comparison will come up more. But
one of the things I noticed about the list of films that are, you know, in all these packages in Cannes were who the hot actors were.
Yeah.
That's how you learn, right? So Jacob Elordi is in everything, along with Daisy Edgar Jones. These are the two big names that show up in, like, multiple projects.
These aren't people who I'm deeply familiar with, I have to admit.
You never saw Normal People?
I've watched Normal
People.
That
was the discovery of Paul Mescal
That was, that's true. And it took a little while for him to find that next stage where he crossed over. So,
he was picked up pretty fast. I mean, he got booked in everything. Now, I mean, she's getting booked in everything too. And then the other, the Jacob Elordi is out of Euphoria, the HBO series.
Yeah.
So he and Zendaya broke out of that.
Yeah. It's interesting thinking about the way the market works. I remember there was this documentary that was not particularly good with a now canceled filmmaker, James Toback and Alec Baldwin. Do you remember that documentary where they went to the Cannes market?
It was about Cannes
and they played it at Cannes where they go to the market and it's like, they're trying to make a movie with Alec Baldwin and Neve Campbell. And then everyone says you need Ryan Gosling and Jessica Chastain. I think it's really interesting. I mean, the movie's not great, and, you know, screw those people.
I remember it being pretty accurate, though.
But it's very accurate how quickly things change. Yeah. So I guess we'll see.
Those are the flavors of the month at the moment.
Yeah. But it is funny how it's like you get these press releases. There's like a constant stream of like announcements, and it's really hard to know if any of that's what will actually be good. And, you know, the buyers will see, like,
which of the movies will actually get made. You know,
yeah.
A lot of these are announcements that never turn into. And I mean, if they don't sell, if they don't actually get the money they need to make a movie, it won't happen.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I mean, Blackberry. I was talking to somebody about this. So IFC, which we talked about last week, it's now in an interesting moment in their history because they have a whole new team. They bought this movie off of a trailer at like AFM or something. You know, so it's, you never really know at one point someone's going to make a business decision that's like, I want this movie to happen.
I always bring this up. I mean, Roadside picked up Judy off of a promo reel, like a 5-minute promo reel.
And probably we're thinking about an Oscar.
A best actress film. Yeah.
Yeah. People make quick decisions in these environments on the basis of what might seem like superficial choices. And sometimes those are brilliant choices and sometimes they're not so brilliant. But I guess we shall see. So next week,
we shall see. So you'll be in Cannes next week.
I'll be there. I'll find you. We'll check in and see how things are going.
All right. You'll be my man on the ground.
Yeah. It'll be a weird time, I'm sure. But you should have some questions for me by then. All right.
Well, I wish I was in the apartment with you. It's sad for me, but I'll be watching from afar.
We'll get you some rosé on Drizzly. You'll be fine.
Okay. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye.